ride home from basketball, I'm ready.
I think our mics are live, and at this time, we will resume tonight's Board of Education meeting. The next item on our agenda is an ends discussion agenda item. The Capital Asset Advisory Committee was established in 2010 for citizen oversight of facility condition and long-range facility planning. Per board policy, the Capital Asset Advisory Committee submits an annual report to the Board of Education. Members of the committee join us tonight to provide comments and answers to questions regarding the 2017-18 annual report. Following that report, an overview of the 2017-18 enrollment report and the 2017-18 summary of findings documents will be presented and discussed with the board. And given these updates, the board will be provided an outline of a proposed 2018 capital improvement program for discussion. Dr. Glass, do you have anything that you would like to add to that formal introduction?
Just to express our appreciation to the members of the Capital Assets Advisory Committee. These folks put in a lot of time and go through a very complicated process in reviewing the significant square footage that JEFCO has, and we're just grateful for their time and attention.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that to everyone's attention, Dr. Glass. Welcome to everyone at the table. I'm not sure exactly who I say. Steve Bell, let's begin the presentation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, President Mitchell, members of the board, Dr. Glass. I sit as a district representative on the Capital Asset Advisory Committee with some of the great citizens that we have in our community. It is an honor for me to be a participant in that, and I'm really pleased to have some of the members here this evening from that committee. You have received their annual report and have read that, and their role this evening is the first phase of the agenda item that you addressed, President Mitchell, and that is with respect to the Capital Advisory Committee and its role and its findings and discussion topics that you'd like to share with them. So they'd like to have this as an interactive session. They will then be dismissed and we'll pursue then phase two of this agenda item, which includes the assessment of the capital improvement program going forward. And that'll be done by members of our facilities department and myself. So to start, I'm gonna pass the mic to members of our CAAC and have them introduce themselves to you. And I've asked each of them to share a little bit about what it is that they do in the community, because these are community people that donate a lot of time, a lot of effort, and their personal resources and expertise to helping JEFCO schools. So we're fortunate to have them.
Hello, my name is Dawn Williams, and I am now the proud parent of two JEFCO graduates. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled with what JEFCO was able to offer to our family. We are a mountain family in the Coal Creek community, and also in the community, I serve as the president of Canyon Cares, which is a nonprofit service organization that helps keep our community strong by helping with financial needs of our neighbors. We raise money all year round so that we can help people when they have a hurdle.
Good evening, I'm Tom Murray, and we're manufacturers in Jefferson County, have been since 1932. Mm-hmm. And we've been mining and manufacturing here. Got a lot of family that's graduated from JEFCO schools, and I'll soon have four grandchildren attending JEFCO schools. So I've got a lot in this game. And so it's great. I'm also on the board of Consolidated Mutual Water Company.
Good evening, my name is Kathy Hodson. I'm a graduate of Jefferson High School a long time ago. Our children went to Ralston Valley, and I'm on this committee because I'm the city manager of the city of Lakewood.
I'm Gordon Callahan. My background is in construction. I was the second generation of my company, and my sons are the third generation, of which both of them graduated from the JEFCO schools. And five of my grandchildren graduated from JEFCO schools. And one of them graduated from Mines, got a wonderful job with Johns Manville, and the other four are all in college. So they're all doing well. And my background has been in this committee and other committees with JEFCO for pretty near 20 years. And my objective and what the things I do is to help education, not only here, but in other countries. I work with an organization. We have schools in Nicaragua and also in Nepal. And I've had very great successes in those countries with the support. As I tell everybody, you know, you can do what you want with your money, but if you teach and provide facilities for kids in these countries, and they're able to learn and go to college, which they're doing, you're far better off than doing other projects. Not that they're not important, but the children in every country are so important.
I'm Jeff Wilhite. My same birthday children went to school in Jefferson County and graduated from Evergreen High School. They're still in college, you know, and that at CU and the other ones at Metro. The way I fit into this committee is two ways. One, I'm on the board of Mountain Phoenix Community Schools, so I'm sort of the charter school person. That was a new role that kind of came about a couple years ago, and I was real pleased that I was able to, you know, join the committee from that perspective. And also for years and years, I did a lot of construction lending, and so I have a familiarity with, you know, just that, the rudimentary part of doing construction work. But we were a funder, not a construction guy. So thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Brett Poole. I'm a commercial real estate appraiser. I have a sophomore at Golden High School. My other son graduated last year from Golden, and he's now at Mesa and doing well. Asset Committee since 2010.
Thank you for doing that. That was really helpful to us to, you know, to realize what your expertise really is and how you fit into our JEFCO community. You guys are pretty well integrated into this JEFCO community. Thank you. Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. The next portion of the interaction here, I'd like to ask Dawn to make some comments. On behalf of the committee, she's been a member for quite some time, and she has a few things she'd like to share with the board. And then we'll have some interaction with members of the board and members of our committee, and that's what we'll do tonight.
Okay, thanks, Steve. So you've read the report, and so the purpose of this part is to just add some more color to it and to bring out some key points that we as committee members feel are important for us. So the annual report is maybe a retrospective, but where we want to give you some feedback for us going forward. And your tenure on the school board now has given you some perspective on what a giant real estate investment we as a community have to manage and be respectful of. It just tipped the scales at $2.88 billion. You have as much acreage as 5 federal centers. You have as much square footage as 11 Colorado Mills. But it's not all in one place. It's now in 169, it went up a tick from last year, campuses. So it's just an enormous asset. It's an enormous asset for our community, but it's an enormous responsibility. So this committee and the importance of having this type of intellect and experience is these volunteers monitor and advise the district's also very experienced and professional facilities staff. So a great asset that you have is this wealth of experience that really, it does need to be strategically utilized. But you couldn't afford to buy the expertise that shows up monthly to advise your staff. But like you, these people donate their time just out of love for the community and love for the school district. Now, we also have that benefit of having some very talented professionals who are definitely the envy of our surrounding school districts. And so to keep that in mind, we want to be able to retain these people. But for example, you're going to have a presentation. The executive director of our facilities is also a licensed architect. It's not something that he advertises. But it just goes to the level of skill that you have to manage the size of resource. So a couple key points we want to talk about. One is the annual capital transfer. So the projected amount for this year is in the $17 million net amount, which sounds like a big number. 17 million sounds like a really big number, but that amounts to about $1.40 per square foot, and it's less than 1% of the value of your asset. And so the district used to net closer to $25 million for the annual capital transfer per year, which was still below the standards used for commercial property, according to committee members who have that type of expertise. Our buildings are aging and getting more expensive to maintain, and we would definitely support a higher annual investment in maintaining our community asset as preventative maintenance. The capital asset transfer, it also, it's not just the maintenance, it goes to supply things like playgrounds, and it supplies furniture. Building security is part of that. Testing for lead in the water, which was done last year. And then they also have to meet unfunded state mandates. So one of the things in the consent agenda was an expense for updates to locks and doors. And so actually they're very conscientious and they're meeting the mandate and going above and beyond the standards in the interest of safety for our students. So having healthy schools, it's just something that I feel like our community takes for granted. Just because of the tremendous work of our district staff. I don't know that our community really appreciates the magic that happens every year to stretch the money that they're given to work with. Because they see good-looking greens, and they see paved parking lots, and they see clean buildings. But the cost to do all the repairs, it does have an industry rating. So that'll be part of the presentations called the Facility Condition Index. So for me, I'm not an industry professional, and I've been learning all the jargon over the years. But as buildings age with limited maintenance, their FCIs go up. So high number means more things that need to be repaired. So just like old cars, they're expensive to maintain. So money goes into things, but you just don't see it. It goes into repairing heating systems. It goes into new windows. You just don't get to see the tangible advantage pictures of what you where you've invested that money. And these older buildings, just they're not built to take advantage of the new educational methodologies. They're not baked in with the latest technologies. And they're not baked in with security for the architecture. So over the past year, two examples of where new facilities to the district really shine and show how a new building can take can show all of that are the Sierra Phase 1 and Phase 2. And the Three Creeks K-8. So it really was a privilege to be able to put on a hard hat and wear boots and walk around while the construction was going on, and thrilled that both of those facilities were completed on time and on budget. And that dedication to on time and on budget, it's something this district staff is very proud of, and rightly so. They deserve a lot of kudos for being able to meet all of the goals. This committee is still working with and supports the key aspects of the published facilities master plan, which is that 5 to 6 year long-term set of goals where efficiency is a key driver in the recommendations. And overall, what it does is it represents the best interests of our community, the students in our district, and best practices from a business point of view. But fulfilling that plan does take new funds. So from last year's master plan, the expansion to middle schools has been a long-standing recommendation of this committee. So it's practical, it supports educational goals, and the district is making that move with the reconfigurations, with the new construction at Drake, where my daughter was a middle schooler, so I sent her pictures and videos of how her school was changing. This will also help with the elementary level pressures on in that high growth area. And these students are gonna get the educational advantages, and the district is demonstrating a commitment to effectively using existing spaces. And that's the type of thing that we're looking for as committee members when we're participating and advising the district. The middle schools, as you know, were built for 3 grades, and you know, we're taking some of that pressure off of those feeder schools that were busting at the seams and where temps were there for the overflow. Now, another theme in the master plan is removing temps, and temps are meant to be temporary. Mr. Reed can tell you how long some of those temporary buildings have been with us, but they're less than ideal for security, and they are oddly expensive from a layperson's point of view to maintain and then to remove. The master plan had significant recommendations for substantial investment in high school improvements. These are still important goals, to have equitable facilities across our campuses And so we do look forward to hearing about new ideas for how to have the best environments for our high school students. We want them to be able to showcase their skills and really fan their passions and prepare for their futures. So soon the community is going to be used to having the middle schools for all three grades, which was the format that we had for three Jeffco middle schools already. But what is new? And so for each new group of parents that comes in and as their children age through the system, it's new to them. And so this means that the facilities management metrics, the type of things that I've been learning and that we're trying to introduce you as board members into our community, these metrics and philosophy, they need to be part of our regular conversation with our parents and our community. So that's a piece of feedback that we have. We just want to make sure that we manage our shared assets and best support the educational goals. And then many of the actions in the master plan support our heartfelt desire for our students to feel safe and to be safe in our schools. And that includes steps, the master plan includes steps to put in new windows, things like door hardware, enhancing building entrances to tighten access through the offices, and also removing the temps. And these are steps that can be done to improve the facility's condition index and also to improve security. To meet all of the district's facility goals and to create optimal and equitable and innovative learning environments, we do support exploring larger funding, such as bonds. The larger needs, as presented in last year's annual report, they've not gone away. We want our school buildings to complement the educational models to prepare our children to lead into the future. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing what type of questions you have about the annual report.
Thank you. Questions, colleagues?
Well, first, I've attended the Capital Asset Advisory Committee once or twice, and I want to thank you for the time that you dedicate to the district over so many years. I think a lot of people are not aware that we have citizens like you that dedicate so much time behind the scenes, so thanks. You mentioned a standard. We're spending about $1.40 a foot. And I think it is important that we educate the community. What is an industry standard that we ought to be looking at? How much should we be spending per foot? And where does that originate? Where does that standard come from?
I'm the wrong person, but I'm looking at Brett down here, who is a professional appraiser.
We talked about that several months ago or something. There were other people. Kind of looking at the idea of, you look at the total value of the portfolio, $2 billion. Figure a new school has an economic life of about 50 years. I would suggest 2% a year, which would be about $40 million.
And we've been putting away about 20-ish, 17-ish. And you should know that we're abundantly aware that we've been shortchanging the capital transfer.
The district's been doing that forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've made up the shortfall with bond issues. We just haven't had that in the last
many 14 years.
Yes. 14 years.
So, you know, part of your being here is educating the community about what we ought to be doing and what we have been doing. And the consequence is that we've got people coming and talking to us about Alameda High School and describing the things that you heard earlier this evening, right? Thank you.
I have the microphone, so I'm going to say.
You go. All right.
Interesting little tool. So I want to thank you for coming to the meeting, you know, first, and Ms. Stevens also for coming to our meeting. Sometimes it feels like we work in a vacuum. Mm. You know, we talk amongst ourselves. I think that's entertaining, but we don't know where, you know. where things go from there, and it would be nice to have your regular appearance at our once a month meetings, because I think it would be helpful to have that connection directly between us and the board. I learn a lot. I'm the newest person on the committee. I constantly learn from these guys, and I think that it would be good that you would also learn more and have the touch. So anyway,
thank you.
Give the microphone.
Since this is a dialogue, I am going to respond to your very positive comment there. Actually, Ms. Stevens brought that to my attention today, that, you know, we need to do a better job of making sure that we have board representation at, you know, at your committee meetings. And we are going to go to work on developing a plan to make sure that, you know, we have at least one board member at each of your meetings. I think that's that is one of the many valid suggestions that you have for us. So
that means a lot to us, and I think it would be great for you guys too. It would be a very mutual thing. Yeah. Thanks for thinking about doing that. We look forward to seeing you.
I want to start by saying thank you. You bring a great deal of expertise, institutional knowledge, and I appreciate that. I was elected a couple years ago, and I was able to land on my feet thanks to the roots that you all have put down. And I just want to let you know as well that in addition to being a board member, I'm a parent, and I've had the opportunity to see firsthand what an extraordinary balancing act that our operations staff does, living in a school with one of those high FCI scores, and recognizing that with limited, painfully constrained inputs, my child's learning environment is rich, robust, repaired, safe, warm, and dry. And despite the fact that the inputs are not sufficient, the facility index score has actually gone down in my child's tenure. So I just want to say thank you for what to me seems like a really positive feedback loop and a working relationship between district leadership as well as your community voices and community expertise. Here's what I've learned from you. I feel like as a teacher, I remember wondering if anything was getting through. I've learned a couple things. I've learned, again, that we have a trusted, high-performing team that we as a community have delivered on time and on budget with the investments that our taxpayers have made in our school portfolio. I have learned that we are insufficient in our funds, but we have a high standard of what we deliver to kids. So thank you. I've also learned that there's a need to ensure that we are not working in silos, that the rich educational outcomes we aim for to prepare our students for their future, that sense of a climate, a culture that's welcoming and safe, and the realities of and logistics of navigating the industry understanding that I, like Dawn, won't be able to carry to the conversation without. So thank you, because that's something I've learned from you. I remember when we talked a year ago, you know, we weathered the 2016 push where we learned firsthand as board members about the needs, and we were unable to convince voters to make the investment at that time. I'm not good at reading crystal balls, and I'm probably even worse at interpreting, reading people's minds. I don't know everything I wish I knew about why that happened, but what I'm hoping you can answer is what do you think and what do you believe are messages that our community responds to and deserves to hear from us about responsibility with dollars and what we're aiming for kids? And then secondly, where will we be with new investment? Where will we be without it? 40,000 foot view.
I don't have a crystal ball either. I think that the message that Jefferson County will respond to, my gut feeling tells me right now safety is a big concern on people's minds, and people want to know that their kids, that we are working towards as much and as safe and
Is his microphone on? I can't tell.
It's on, but I didn't know how to use it. Sorry.
Get closer to it, Tom.
Closer to the problem.
There.
So I think safety is a big issue. And I think that people, the young people that I talk to, and that's one of the missing links. We don't get and participate enough with young people and young families and what their stresses are and so forth. But I try to communicate with them as much as possible. And their biggest concern is preparing their kids for a future that is so indeterminate at this point. You know, are we really Are we really getting that? I think Dr. Glass has got a lot of new vision, and I think that's great, but we got to make sure that our older buildings and our facilities mesh up with the vision of preparing these people for the future. So if there was any message that I would have, it would be those two things. We're going to prepare our students for the future. We're going to do the very best we can with the newest ideas and technology where possible, and we're going to keep them safe while we're doing it. That's what I think.
So I am interested in hearing from all of you, what do you believe people will find persuasive? If we're to consider going out there with a bond, hypothetically, what do you think people need to see to persuade them that it's justified?
I think one of the things that I believe, first of all, you got to be real honest with the people that the money's going to the schools and that we need that. I was, you know, listening to the woman that you just mentioned from Alameda. Alameda's a school that's, we've been trying to get money for it, but we just haven't had it. And I think you're going to see more people standing at the podium expressing the exact same sentiments that this woman did. Mm-hmm. And you can't run your home, you can't run your business unless you have continual maintenance. And when a furnace isn't performing, you can't change the thermostat to get better results. Somehow, we've been trying to tell people that the only way these schools in the past have been able to continue to operate and have good facilities . I'm not sure whether people really understand that, but I think we're reaching the point where more people are going to start saying, you know, we just got to do something.
The challenge, I'm sorry to interrupt you, the challenge is that people come and speak to us about the conditions, but, you know, we're the choir. You know, we don't need to hear it. We need to understand how we're going to get that messaging out to the 70% of the public that never sets foot in a building and needs to be persuaded that they actually do have an interest in the success of our school system, whether they have a child in the school system or not. How are we going to get the message out? What do we need to be showing people that will persuade them of that?
Well, I think the biggest thing we need to do is look at what we can get from the press or from the community. Somebody from the Denver Post come in here, or we go to them with and more people are going to go to the press and to the internet and start voicing their opinions. Pretty soon you're going to get a reporter from the Denver Post or from Sentinel or somebody that's going to say, what is happening in this school district? They love these kind of programs. They love these kind of stories. So I think we're at the point where we're going to hear more and more from the community, especially the school community and the teachers, that things are not continuing to improve, but they're deteriorating. I mean, every time something happens in the government, some reporter goes out and, you know, starts saying, well, so-and-so did this, and they did this, and all of these things. So I think eventually this is going to come to the surface. But I was amazed what that woman said. I've never heard that before in this room. And not that I come to all these meetings, but it's going to be not only in our system, but in, you know, more school systems are going to face the same problem. And there's not going to be money from the state or anybody else to help us out in the need that we need. And so just need to get to the people that have a voice that is expressed, radio announcers, anybody that will take on this problem.
You know, I do see that on your number six, it does encourage that decisions be made through active involvement and communications with the community. And I guess that's collectively the district and through your recommendations task. Is that, or do you have a clear plan, community engagement plan? I was wondering. I would think it would be all of us together, right? That's what I'm... Well, I mean, it just, you're number six, and I agree with it. And then per Brad's question, I was just thinking, this sounds like it's more of a, you know, a community engagement, a healthy community engagement plan, right? To get out the word, right? Okay.
Yes. The district is executing things currently, and will be over the next several months and into the fall to engage the community around this question of where we should go with our facilities and our capital improvement plan and what potential solutions might come forward around how we execute the things that are included in those plans. So I think we will be doing that work over the next several months.
Okay. That's
I'm going to tag on that for just a moment. Still on. Okay. Is we do have the district's communication teams do participate in our meetings, and they are great about funneling good news. They've been very active in that. Though to go to Mr. Rupert's question about how do we engage people and my earlier comments about things look good, I my personal thought is maybe we need to tell them that it's time. Things aren't as good as they look on the outside. We've done everything we can, and it's time for us as a community to step up. So our communication may be there, but maybe the tone of the communication needs to change.
Do you, go ahead. I know you want to comment, so go ahead.
Oh, let me do that real quick. So,
no problem.
You know, I have, I'm the charter school guy on this committee. You know, that used to be kind of an iffy thing, but now they like me better. Yeah, so that's a good thing. But when you look at, when you look at that particular group of people, charter school parents are pretty active when they decide they want to be. And I think since you've been kind enough to continue to hopefully share the bond money with them, that they will be very active in supporting it. And they look at things differently, you know, I think, because it's real money to them. I mean, it's real important. What I was thinking before was, you got a 50-50 split, so you got to figure out how to get that 1% to tip over, mm-hmm. you know, and vote and make it happen. That's what didn't happen last time. I think what I saw was too much happy talk happened last time. The true issues weren't presented very well in terms of what the schools need. And the problem is, I'll go back and finish with, and Tim's people do a great job making everything look good. I mean, we're always just impressed with what you're able to do. And so the fact that he does that is a plus, but it's a minus because it looks like everything's okay. So, you know, we talk about this part all the time. It's like, that's tough, you know. So I don't know. Maybe you can kind of stop doing a good job for a little bit. Maybe, no.
Please don't.
Okay, so thanks.
Don't give him any more directions, all right?
Anybody else?
But yes, you're right. Sense of urgency.
Well, I might just be stating the obvious, but from a community perspective, the schools, whether you have children that attend the schools or not, they're a really important asset to our communities, and they are part of the oxygen for the lifeline of a community. So when the school fails, then so does the community itself. So I think Jeffco Schools does a wonderful job inviting the community to use the site when the school hours, when the kids aren't in school. So that makes for just such an asset for the community, and I think that's an important message. Although there are 70% of our voters aren't necessarily actively in the schools, boy, having those community schools in our communities is really essential for the vibrancy of a community. And I think what Tom said is so important too, especially now, the security issues and what we're seeing nationally and the fear that we're hearing from our own students about their own safety, I think that's an important message that we really need to punctuate as we're looking for additional funding.
And I'm hearing from you two clear messages. The first one is that we are not allocating enough resources annually to properly maintain our capital investment. I mean, you can rephrase that however you want to. That's me rephrasing your recommendation, but I'm hearing that pretty loudly, and I'm also hearing you say that we probably are at a critical time in terms of being able to invest in capital improvements across this district for safety and security reasons and to bring our facilities up to a standard that allows us to realize the vision that we're setting forth from an educational point of view. I think that's the two big messages that I'm, and you guys are experts. I wish that, I wish we could just divide you and you guys could be the total voters that we have to that we have to go to, but that's not going to happen. But it is powerful that people who are as knowledgeable as you see this as a critical juncture for Jefferson County in terms of our capital assets.
Just one quick third thing, I think, that, and that is the participation as much as possible of the education side of the equation so that we can align our facilities plans with the objectives and the complicated objectives of preparing students for the future. And so we need to really work together, maybe more. You know, we need to have more participation of educators along with our experience in building so that we're aligning these things so that it makes sense to people that vote, that the money's being invested to get the job done.
I will quickly say one thing, two things. Boy, adequacy and equity matters at every level, and knowing that we probably manage just under half what we should be investing annually in that capital transfer is powerful. So, we may be able to make small incremental steps, but there's a great big need for bigger solutions. The second thing I'll say is thank you for a couple of the showcases that you and your advice was a part of, and that is that Three Creeks new build in Sierra, where we have a showcase of what a new school can look like. And then the second one is that Rose Stein reopening and that renovation. I think some of the work that, despite losing a bond, despite knowing that funding for education is not where it deserves to be for Colorado students, we have examples, thanks to your advice and your partnership with district leadership, of what can be with investment. And I hope that's not too rosy. I do feel that sense of urgency that we're going to lose the ability to make that vision real for every kid and that equity real in every school campus. So thank you guys very much.
Yeah, and I just want to say thank you as well. And optics do matter. And beyond that, though, even in some of our buildings that people may from the outside say, optically, this looks good, the longer they're there without that maintenance, internally, they may be sweltering in that building. So as it goes on, beyond the optics, beyond the equity, beyond the lack of parity, those things are also festering underneath that. We do have an obligation to get our community into our schools. And that is another challenge that we have. As I look at our growing aging population right down the street in Lakewood and getting those lovely people into our buildings to see our arts and what was the presentation on what the auditorium looks like. The lights that maybe aren't working. We have an obligation to get those people into the building to see those lovely children, to see those facilities, to feel a part of that community that they can thrive in, just like the gentleman who talked about not having kids, and as soon as he stepped foot in that building, he just wanted to be there every day. Just in terms of another challenge, which we talk about a lot, media, great. Yes, as well as reaching out within our own communities and opening those doors and welcoming them, and not to mention the families that are in our own buildings that don't go into our buildings. Many people who have kids in schools are familiar with their building, but there's so many more out there. And that parity issue of embracing the schools that do have those new opportunities, those new optics, to pay it forward in those communities. And wouldn't every parent like that has that child in that school to give that opportunity to all students? It's a tough sell, but it's an important one.
I think I would like to say to each and every one of you, individually and collectively, thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for the advice you give us. If you can help us inform our public, please do. We sometimes do things that work against us, in my opinion. We do a renovation like Rose Stein. It's magnificent. I'm proud of it. Our team has done a great job there. And so, you know, people think, well, you know, that was pretty easy for them. Well, it was actually pretty expensive. And so sometimes the little things that we do work against us in terms of justifying the need for what we really need. And what we really need is a major investment in our capital assets and improvements. So thanks for your time. Thanks for your voices.
Are we going through the PowerPoint?
No, I got lost there too.
No, I thought we were going on to another presentation. Am I right,
okay.
Steve?
All right.
Yeah. I was maybe getting ahead of myself there, Steve, but that's what I thought we were moving towards doing. So thank you very much, Capital Asset Committee.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was a little confusing to me.
We're going with specifics now.
Okay.
That was general. That was general.
I don't know if we're for some advice there. Maybe we should rotate that. That's fine.
I'm sorry, my mic's on.
It's sort of hard to find when you have to go to the.
Okay, I had no idea. Well, I hear these guys talking about that.
Okay. But it's informative to go there. The other thing is, we need to come up with a way.
So, Mr. Bell, when you're ready, part two. Give us some insight.
Part two. Thank you, President Mitchell. Second part of the presentation this evening is going to be per the request of the members of the board. In 2016, we all shared at that point in time what was termed a facility master plan. What we'd like to do this evening is update, not the facility master plan, but I would call it a capital needs assessment program that we've been working on since 2016. This is an update, an overall review. It is not, I would say, line item by line item, but it does have significant categories of improvements. We're going to do this in a couple of phases tonight. The first part, Bruce Huxley, our Director of Property Management, is going to share with you the enrollment projections that we have. Obviously, enrollment does dictate to us students and seats and spaces throughout the district in our facilities. He's going to share with you also a summary of findings report. You'll recall the summary of findings is an analysis primarily by the FCI, the Facility Conditions Index, of our existing facilities. And then Tim Reed, our executive director of our facilities group, is going to share with you an overview of our capital improvement program needs assessment. We're going to share with you the goals, and I think I'd like to borrow a comment that Tom Murray from the Capital Advisory Committee made. Our goals have not changed, and they probably never will. From physical plant management, the goal is to provide the best educational environment that we can for our students. That's our goal. That's our mission. That's what our facility should do, whether it's educational adequacies or it fits in the vernacular of the warm, safe, and dry concept. And then Tom also mentioned safety in our schools. Obviously, a lot of attention on that these days, but that's always been and will continue to be a primary driver for us as we manage our physical plant. So with that, I'm going to ask Bruce to initiate this part of our discussion with the enrollment report and the summary of findings update.
Mr. President, members of the board, enrollment projection is something that we look at every year, where we study past trends of enrollment in the district and project forward 2 to 5 years based on those trends. And there are a lot of different methodologies that we use. But what I'll focus on tonight is just the summary of some of the conclusions that we have from past statistics versus this current year, and then share in with some projections for the next 2 to 5 years. This first slide, on the left-hand column there, we're looking at some comparisons between 2016-17 and 17-18. Between that school year, we had an overall decrease of 230 students in the district. You'll see the number there, 86,361 to 86,131. That's a minus 0.3% decrease. And you'll see later on that we see some decreases and increases, but the bar moves slightly because of the size of the district as we move forward. Of that overall decrease in 230 students, we lost 529 students from our district-managed schools. But we also increased in our charter population 299 students for that net decrease of 230 students. On the right-hand side, I have a little longer look, 2008 to current. Over the past 10 years, district-wide enrollment increased by 196 students. So you have that zero baseline. And over the last 10 years, we've been slightly above that with positive and slightly below that with negative. And I have a chart later on that I can represent that a little better. District-managed schools over the last 10 years decreased enrollment by 4,300 students. During that same period, charter schools increased enrollment by 4,500 students, a little over 4,500. And then that last statistic, in 2008, 6.4% of our students were in charter schools. Currently, we have 11.9% in charters, and that's an increase of about 5,200 to 9,700 students. This slide here talks about historic enrollment of the last 10 years, including this year. And you can see the it's kind of the sine curve, slight sine curve over the years of this of the stability of the district. And in the lower right hand with the blue graph shows our projections over the next 5 years. We project about the same stability. We're going to lose a few students over the next couple of years and then start gaining back a little bit. We do have some significant growth we're watching in the Northwest Arvada area, as well as some potential growth that we're starting to really look at closely because of proposed developments down in the Rooney Valley area. Factors affecting enrollment that we've tracked very closely, declining birth rate in the area, not only in Jefferson County and Colorado, but also in the United States in general. Aging demographics, specifically in Jefferson County, shifting populations mobile populations. Increase in charter enrollment affects our overall enrollment. And then, of course, economic condition that we all know, very, very strong economic climate out there right now, which affects families as they move around. This chart just shows what we did is we took some CDE data that was published and we created this chart out of that data. So the fat blue line with the dots that runs across the top, that's Jeffco schools over the last 10 years. And so you can see it's relatively stable for the size of district. That peach colored line or orange line that's escalating to the right, that's Denver Public Schools. And they are starting to see a flattening of their enrollment as well. So. For the near future, we project a similar trend with our flat line there. I'll move on to summary findings. Are there any questions to this point before I move on? Okay. All right, mm-hmm. Thank you. So summary findings is also something we do annually. Sorry. We use this document to help track our needs throughout the district and our overall portfolio value. Again, it's just a summary of last year to this year. Real estate portfolio value, this is the replacement value in kind. We have increased a little over 4.5%, 4.63% from last year, from $2.75 billion to $2.88 billion in terms of replacement value in the district. Our condition assessment, that's where we go in and we look at educational adequacies as well as physical conditions, roofs, boilers, things like that, has increased a little under 2.25% from $575 million to $588 million. Our permanent square footage has also increased from 11.7 to a little over 11.8. This is a result of adding the Three Creeks and a little additional square footage at Sierra when we replaced that original building. So about a 0.5% increase in permanent square footage in the district. And then the last line on this is very encouraging. Facility condition index has gone down. So we've been putting money in the right places over the last year, from 20.9% to 20.4%. So that's good news. Summary findings overview, deficiencies by priority. So we prioritize all our deficiencies by critical down to, we call enhancements, but they're still needed, paint, things like that. Sometimes FF&E is in that last category. And the percent change between the last 2 years. So you can see as priority one, critical needs, we have a drop in those needs by about 8.5%. So again, that shows that we're putting money in the right place for these priority one critical needs from 32 to 29.5 million. The others, however, are priorities two through five. Those are the up and coming priority ones as we move through the system. We take care of three items, pull them off the list, add two items as things age and break. So I won't go into those specific percent changes, but you can see our priority twos waiting in the wing. We've got a significant need, an 8.5% increase just over the last year with those priority two needs. And then the bottom line there, I wanted to kind of point out some of the detail of a priority one, why we have that 8.5% drop. We really focused on electrical needs in the classrooms, in the buildings in particular. This included lighting and electrical power in the classrooms and other needs, and plumbing needs. You can see a significant reduction in those out of priority one. And some of that had to do with replacing lead in faucets and things like that that we've identified. So it took care of some other needs for us. And that's the end of this portion of the presentation.
Evidence of what Mr. Wilhite mentioned, which is you all do such extraordinary work and continue to demonstrate improved conditions under the worst possible budget constraints. So thank you very much for that.
I want to mention, you know, the team that does this work. I mean, the facilities group is, it's over 700 that work in the entire department, and they do an outstanding job for us, and certainly make my job doable, shall we say. So, I'd like to move into the proposed 2018 capital improvement program. We were asked a couple of months ago to begin to draft an outline for a capital improvement program. So this is kind of the results of this. It's a high-level view, kind of go through the process that we went through to kind of arrive at some of these recommendations. And so we'll just take you to it. One of the first things we wanted to do was kind of have a mission statement in terms of what we were trying to accomplish. You know, and it fits with what our goal of providing the best learning and teaching environment is throughout the district. So this is a capital program that we want to use to improve, enhance, and secure all, and I stress the all, Jeffco Public Schools, and result in a learning environment that prepares our students for the future. I think this is, it's very important for us to have kind of a mission statement in terms of what we want to try to accomplish. So as we went through the beginning to develop this plan, we identified six areas that we wanted to kind of focus on. One is called efficiency and modernization, which is really based on a review of our current assets, what our deficiencies, what our educational adequacy needs are, things of that nature. So we went through literally school by school over 11 categories and looked at what those needs were, and then developed what the possible cost would be to make corrections to these. The second is what we're referring to as parity among facilities. As we look at our facilities, particularly our older high schools, we really recognize that we have kind of two categories. We have what we call the pre-1980 high schools, and we have the post-1980 high schools. And there's a big difference between the pre-1980s and the post-1980s. So what you're going to see as we go through this is an attempt to begin to create a parity between the pre and the post. I mean, it becomes very important, I think, to, and we heard it tonight around the discussion at Alameda. We looked at programmatic needs, which are further enhancements and additions to our middle schools. We've been doing additions to the most critical middle schools right now to support the K-5, 6, 8 program. But we have other needs in middle schools that are going to be next year or the year after bumping up against their capacity ceiling, and they're going to need improvements and renovations and things of that nature. So that deals with that. Growth areas we've discussed in terms of the Northwest area, possible new facility, a new school up there, addition to Three Creeks, if it continues to grow the way it is. West Lakewood, as we track that that enrollment. And we also looked at potential replacements. We established kind of a criteria as far as what we would look at to come back and recommend that a building actually be replaced on site. It's not a consolidation, but simply saying this building is 60 years old, and it's time. I mean, we've gotten more than our money's worth out of it, and we can't continue to pump money into it to keep it going. And then the last item dealt kind of with specialty items. It includes additional security measures, additional technology measures that we want to take, things of that nature. So looking at our what we refer to as our pie chart for the overall program, you can begin to see that efficiency and modernization, the first category, is the biggest piece of the pie, represents about a third of it. Parity and programmatic needs are the next two larger pieces, which represent roughly 20% of the pie, and the balance is growth areas, replacements, and specialties. So as we looked at the efficiencies and modernization category, we looked at every site and we analyzed it based on these areas. And some of these areas have subcategories. So like exterior envelope has several subcategories which deal with windows, with doors, with the exterior building material, things of that nature. Interior finishes deals with flooring, ceilings, partitions, wall finishes, casework, things of that type. So, and we also looked obviously at FF&E, fixtures and furnishings, food service, mechanical equipment is all, and electrical items and systems are always going to be on this kind of a shopping list, paving and playgrounds, information technology and security. What we want to try to accomplish, or the goal that we kind of established for ourselves, was a 50% reduction in our FCI. So what we would be doing is we'd be going from a 20% down to a 10%. And that would be huge, would make a huge difference in our schools and how they function. And a result of that would also be a significant reduction in our maintenance and operation costs. We estimate 20%. Now my maintenance and operations budget is $50 million a year. That's a $10 million reduction. One of the areas that we're that we're recommending in this is replacing all of the lighting in our buildings with LEDs. And where we have done this already, we've seen a 20% reduction in our electrical usage. So we believe that reaching this kind of a goal is very realistic. So this is how the efficiency and modernization pie breaks down. As you can see, the mechanical and the electrical portion represent almost 50% of the group. A significant chunk to furnishings and fixtures. For instance, a high school to replace the fixture, the furnishings in a high school is about $1 million. I mean, just all of the classroom furniture, the teacher furniture, things of that nature. So just to give you an idea of what the magnitude of that type of thing is. And we've been making significant investments in our FF&E budgets at schools over the last 4 years anyway. I think we're investing $2 million this year. Also, finishes have a large chunk of this envelope. Roofing actually may shrink a little because of the hail work that we're doing this summer. We're doing about $8 million worth of hail work, as you can see two of it occurring right above us. And then we have paving and playground. So the next category was what we call parity among the facilities. And what we were trying to do is create a consistent learning and teaching environment in our schools, correct programmatic deficiencies between our schools, comply with our district educational specification and our technical guidelines. Those are the four things that we really want to achieve and believe that we can do that. So this is how the pie breaks down for this group. As you can see, almost, well, let's say 60% of the pie represents the pre-1980 high schools. So it's a significant investment in schools like Columbine, Pomona, Standley, which is actually post-1980, but there is an investment there too. Green Mountain, Alameda, all of these, this whole backlog that we have of need in our high school that really needs to be addressed. And this is one way that we believe that we can do this. So what we've done in the case of this piece, this portion, is we've taken the efficiency and modernization funds that the school would be allocated as a result of the district-wide review, and then we've added additional capital to that. To begin to achieve a substantial amount of money where we believe we can go in and not tell somebody, you know, well, this is going to be phase one of your project. What we're looking at is trying to get to parity all in one fell swoop, so to speak. I mean, 6-year program, things can change, but I think that what we're looking at in terms of an allocation, we can get there. So the next area deals with programmatic needs and, again, trying to meet the educational requirements in terms of the K-5-6-8, continuing to that. We want to be able to address, like I said earlier, the capacity and enrollment issues that are going to be affecting some of our schools that either are receiving temps or will be in the future. Also included in this is the removal of the significant number of temps. We're looking at approximately 170 as a result of this program. And then we're also looking at the possibility of new programs that might require new buildings as well. So in terms of growth and replacement, again, I mentioned where we're considering or recommending consideration for new facilities. The replacement criteria that we're looking at are high FCI schools, large sites, so that we could actually build the building on the site and still keep the other school occupied, similar to what we did with Sierra. Educational adequacy, significant educational adequacy deficiencies, high operations and maintenance costs, and and specialized needs or program requirements that may be out there as well. Looking at safety and security, and we are, I'm actually proud to say, I think we're well ahead of the curve. We haven't done enough, but we have been, over the last 5 or 6 years, we have made significant strides in what we've done with our facilities, including secure front entries, alarming all of the perimeter doors of our high schools, instituting the classroom lock program, and a number of other facility-related items that, you know, that we have done, that we've managed to carve out of our capital budget to go ahead and do this kind of work. So what we're looking at in addition to that under this program would be further secure of our building perimeters, better entry control, increased site monitoring, classroom security, fire sprinkler systems, and increased video surveillance. So those would all be part of an additional package. Plus, you know, as we go in and actually do a renovation of a school or a high school or something, where we might end up actually relocating the office or things of that nature, those are security enhancements too. Every time we remove a temp, that is a security enhancement in and of itself. So there's a lot of things that aren't necessarily on this list, but that they will be further security enhancements throughout the district. And then as far as technology, increased support for the one-to-one devices, increased bandwidth, state-of-the-art hardware, increased reliability and system security. And again, you know, we have a shopping list here, and actually in a capital project, in an expansion or renovation, there's IT items that are installed at the same time. I mean, we put them in as a part of the capital program, so there's things in there that would occur that really aren't shown up there. So, here's the price tag. So what we're looking at is an overall package of $647 million. And how that breaks down is that the efficiency and modernization piece is $242 million. Parity among facilities is $118 million. Programmatic needs is $46. Growth, $55. Replacements, $96. Specialty items, $25. And the charters, $65. Or 10% of the total bond. All right.
On that note.
Okay. So, obviously, this is a time for questions, and I think perhaps direction from the board a little bit, but. I would like to point out that you have already made the statement, and this was brought up by our capital asset group, you have already made the statement that we are going to share capital funds with our charter schools. And so that's really not a question. That's something that we plan to do.
We assume that we've done that in the past. We are assuming that it would be a part of this, this package as well.
Wow, I just want to make an observation. A little bit later in the board agenda, we'll be considering a resolution regarding great schools, thriving communities. And we've just heard about the great work you all consistently do under tough budget constraints and the reality of the investment that's needed to do right by our kids in our facilities. We are looking at two enormous funding challenges. One is a 30-year statewide crisis. And the next one is a 15-year Jeffco crisis because we haven't been able to win a major capital investment since 2004. Let me just say I'm a little intimidated by that. And also thank you for your great work to ensure that innovative, effective learning is happening despite that. And I sure would love us not to be staring at these two enormous challenges because we've fallen so far short on the basics of adequacy and equity. So,
woof.
Keep in mind that as, you know, this is probably a six-year program. And so, yeah, 15 years or going on 16 years since we've, you know, not passed a bond, but it could still be another two or three before some of this comes online as well. So a lot of these facilities may not have had an investment in nearly 20 years.
Mr. Reed, I think this is an excellent overall presentation, and I mean that sincerely. It lets us begin to break things down into general categories. I guess I've known that probably we would look at capital improvements and greatly increasing the revenue to do that. One of my hopes has been, and I wonder, I just want you to react to what I'm saying here, but one of my hopes has been that we could do some things like we did at Rose Stein, which I really thought was spectacular. We took a building, we invested some money, and we gave that building modernization and a whole new look. And so one of my hopes as I thought about looking at this was that would we have the resources in the plan to do that kind of thing? Not that everything gets exactly what a Rose Stein did, but in this overall plan, do we have the resources, in your opinion, to do this for a large number of our older elementary schools and sort of bring them up, give them a new life, if you will?
Yes, I believe we do, and that was one of the reasons that we developed the 11 categories to evaluate each school by, because we wanted to take kind of a Stein-like approach in terms of, okay, what does the school need? Where are the greatest needs? And this has allowed us to do it. And I think if the voters are willing to invest $240 million in our existing facilities, yes, we will see a major transformation in what they look like.
Of a large number of our older, inadequate educational facilities in our elementary schools?
There's an evaluation process that we need to share with you, and that is this, that some of our buildings are structurally sound and can be renovated like Rose Stein. Mm-hmm. Some of them are not. So we cannot infuse that major renovation type project, at least without incurring almost as much cost as it would take to replace the building. So we make that evaluation from site to site. So inherent in this plan are some remodels, renovations, major renovation projects, but some are replacements. And you've seen those in your packet, I think. And those replacements are just buildings that the cost of us trying to renovate, remodel, repair is nearly the cost to completely demolish and rebuild. So that's an analysis that we do on each site.
I appreciated the slide on page 14 addressing the differences between the 1980 pre and post for high schools. That was a real good visual for me in terms of the age of a number of those buildings and a lack of our ability to address that. We do spend a lot of time talking about elementary, middle school from here, and I really do appreciate you putting it in that format. Because it speaks volumes if you're looking at those two different eras of buildings and buildings that got bond dollars in 2004. It, night and day. So I appreciate that. And as I'm looking at your itemization, modernization, all the influx, and there's a significant number that you've listed there that we do have a lot of those buildings that are old. So I appreciated that visual on 14. And I know it looks like a big chunk of the pie, but there's a reason for that. So I appreciate that.
Well, I think this is, you know, as if we decide, if you decide to go forward with this and you're thinking in terms of visuals, well, the great visuals are to have our great videographer with communications go to Green Mountain and maybe photograph a science lab there. Mm-hmm. And then the next frame, go over to Bear Creek mm-hmm. and photograph that science lab. So that you can really begin to see what we're talking about between a pre and a post 1980 facility.
Right.
And it's not just like the science labs. I mean, it's kind of across the board.
Correct. And you know, and it's that, how do you make that parallel? But you look at an old house and a house that's built 40 years later, 50 years later, how that's completely reconfigured for efficiencies, for modernization, and, you know, healthy, functional living. Yes. I thank you for doing it in that way to address how many of them there are as well.
So was that visual? Was that for high schools only, or is that including?
Well, there's the other schools in there that are the orange wedge in there, which is represents probably about, I don't know, 20% of the pie is for some elementary schools and some middle schools that also need the same kind of treatment. In other words, they need to be brought up to a kind of the same standards as some of their other schools.
So the orange section of that pie are elementaries and
some middle schools
that are pre-1980?
No, that they just need to be brought up to parity level.
Okay.
And most of them are pre-1980.
Yeah.
I mean, you take a look at a Mohome, an Edgewater, a Lumberg.
Yeah.
Some of those. But then you also have others that, even with the K568, are still going to have a raft of temps. Powderhorn, for instance. Or, you know, some of the other ones that have a heavy intensity of temps that will remain on that site even after we make the grade, you know, the grade reconfiguration. Take an Iber, for example.
So I was wondering, you know, when I was looking at this graph, and then you started talking about pre-1980, I was wondering, and then I was looking at the FCIs, how do you determine priority between, because there are high schools on the list that have an FCI lower than 20%, and I'm not including, Alameda does, but I know it's because of their addition from the, I'm not including Alameda or Jefferson, but others that are below 20% are on your list of getting significant dollars. When we have elementaries and middle that are above 20% that I'm not sure are on the list. Is there, what is?
Well, I think one of the things to look at when it comes to analyzing FCI is that an elementary or a middle school is, an elementary school might be a quarter the size of a high school, so it's going to have a lower replacement cost, but it could still need significant deficiencies in terms of, you know, maybe it needs a new boiler or some new air handling units or something like that, that might constitute 30% of the replacement value of the building. But because the building is smaller, its FCI is going to be higher, as opposed to a high school, which is four times the size, may need still the same improvements, but it would be lower because it represents a lower percentage of the overall replacement value. That begins to kind of clarify it a little bit. So your bigger schools are probably always going to carry a little bit lower FCI, unless they're literally falling down around, you know, around you, and we don't have any like that.
Okay, and so to Ron's point earlier, like, because we don't have itemized renovations, or would you say that most of the 20% are above elementaries?
Keep in mind, this is an outline of a program. So we need to flesh it out. We need to identify where the investment should be made, what the program for that individual school would be. You know, what kind of improvements are we going to make, not just at the high schools, but at the elementaries and at the middles? Because, like I said, every school under this scenario gets touched. Even some of our new schools still have deficiencies that should be addressed.
Awesome. And I love that you mentioned just by converting to LED lighting, we've reduced the e-bill 20%. Are there any other green?
I should have brought a, I don't have it with me. I will send it to Helen. I just got from our energy manager a 5-year look back at our electrical usage. And it consistently drops. I mean, our education program, the improvements that we're making to facilities, converting to different kinds of mechanical systems,
excellent,
different lighting, it's making a big difference. It's kind of like being a salmon swimming upstream, though, because the reality is that Excel's got this figured out. I mean, no matter how hard we try or how much less electricity we use, the dent in the electrical bill doesn't change a lot. I mean, 50% of our bill is electricity that does not get used. It's what's called the demand charge, and it's Excel's capital investment to provide us the electricity that we might need, not that we will need, but that we might need. So, so it's complicated, but yeah. We are succeeding in at least declining usage, which is encouraging. And I, like I said, I'll see that Helen gets that and she can distribute it amongst you tomorrow.
And then I had another question, because I know I'll be asked this. For the Northwest area, you're thinking in addition to Three Creeks and Leiden Rock or whatever, or another school up there, have we seen any changes in trends of growth up there? That, because at the last bond, there were two proposed schools in two different phases, but at that time it was only a K-5 in Three Creeks. So I just, I know I'll be asked, so I was just wondering if at this point you've thought, you can answer that for me.
Well, keep in mind in the Northwest Corridor, and I'll just go back to where we were a few years ago, the projections that we received from the city and developers and such still indicate, you know, that at build-out we'll have over 8,000 rooftops. If that's true, and they keep building, and they keep coming, then we are going to have to be considering at least one, maybe another, K-5 or K-8 facility. We have two pieces of property, one in Leiden Rock, which is probably more suitable for a K-5 because it's very difficult to build on, so we don't have a lot of real buildable acres. Maybe 60% of the property is actually buildable, and it will take quite a bit of expense to prepare it. The other is in the Table Rock site, which we probably could put a K-8, possibly. It might be a little cramped. And we'll have to evaluate which of those we want to do. The Three Creeks, you know, we're going to be expanding to K-8 in a year, and we think those numbers are going to be there. We do have some room in our elementaries because of the K-5 configuration, but if our trends hold true, 8,000 rooftops will bring us 8,000 kids. About 50% of those are K-5. That's where we've been historically.
So then as this progresses, I will be continuing to ask that question.
So do we. We meet with the city folks and the county folks about
how's a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan?
How's this going? 15?
Okay.
Well, I think one of the things that we are looking at, Steve mentioned it, you know, next year is going to be kind of a watershed year because we'll really begin to see what the impact of converting the elementaries to a K-5, but also the kind of pressure that it's going to be putting on, particularly in the north area. What kind of pressure will it put on Ken Carl or Wayne Carl, for instance? And one of the things that we've looked at is, okay, what are our opportunities for an addition to there? Because it really, you know, our newer middle schools were only designed for two grades, as opposed to an Oberon, which was originally designed for three grades. But we're also looking at what the impact will be on Oberon and whether or not, you know, we have a permanent square footage replacement at that building so that we get rid of the temps that we're going to be putting in there over the summer. So we're going to be keeping an eye on the entire area to see what the impact of the K-5-6-8 transition is as well.
Thank you.
As well as growth.
But this is actually a proposed, what would you say, 5-6 year plan?
I'd say realistically it's a 6-year plan.
6-year plan it is, but it is not a long-range forever plan, and, you know, we have to own up to that.
Correct.
I would like to point out one thing, President Mitchell, on the plan, since you're talking about the duration of the plan, and that is this, and this question came up today. Ms. Stevens was in the CAC meeting, that the bond issue proposed in 2016 was $535. If I look at this program of about $650 less charters, $65, we're in the $585 range, and the question today was, gee, that's more than $535. This isn't exactly the same, but it's got a lot of the same features in it. But if you'll recall, in 2016, construction costs for the type of facilities that we build was going up at 8 to 12% a year. That hasn't changed. So if I just look at the static program from 2016 and import a 8 to 12% cost escalation over 2 years, there we are.
Okay. I'm interested in knowing you've got the priorities for the severity of the need, the one, your 1 through 5. Are priorities 1 through 3, say, pretty evenly spread through your 6 various categories, or are they concentrated somewhere?
No, not necessarily. I mean, we looked at, you know, when we developed a, kind of the matrix of looking at it, we really looked at, you know, okay, where is the need? I mean, we can pull up all of the deficiencies by school that each of them has, and then kind of made a determination of, okay, the, let's say, the exterior of the school looks good, but the inside really needs work. I mean, it needs new furnishings, it needs new casework, it needs new carpet, it needs new lights. Well, lighting is district-wide, but it needs new ceilings, you know, those kinds of things. Or we looked at our, some of our open plan schools, like a Ute Meadows or a Hutchinson, for instance, where they were originally open plan. They came in, they subdivided it into classrooms, but they used these demountable partitions that never seemed to get demounted. They're always fixed, and then they started painting them and everything else. But you can literally stand in one classroom and hear exactly what's going on in the other. So when it comes, so if you were to see a partition replacement, it would be that kind of a thing. That would be one of the that is one of the categories of evaluation as well. So we really looked at what it was going to take to improve the quality of the learning environment of the facility. Not, you know, obviously we address items 1 and items 2 as quickly as we can, but we're a little more discretionary when it comes to, you know, 3 and 4, looking at, okay, how do we really improve what we're trying to accomplish here?
Honestly, one of the things I think about is whether the size of the ask was a big part of the problem 2 years ago. And if it was, then we need to pay attention to that and consider whether we ought to be asking for everything. And I know that because of the way we fund our facilities, we need to be on a regular routine of going back and getting the funding. But if you ask and the answer is no, you haven't helped yourself. And that's what happened 2 years ago. We asked and the answer was no, and we're in a world of hurt.
Well, I think one of the things, one of the differences between what this program outlines and 2 years ago is that this has a, this basically has a heavy emphasis on deferred maintenance. And then when I say we're touching every school, we are doing that. We didn't do that in 2016, and that might have been a mistake. I mean, it's hard maybe to develop the kind of enthusiasm when you say, well, gee whiz, I see what the list of things you're doing, but I don't see my school on here. Mm-hmm. We can go to any school now and say, these are on the list that we're going to do to fix your school. I think that's the big difference.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you if we can, you know, maybe focus our attention, you know, as a board in terms of what next steps do we see that, you know, we'd like to have? Where do we head with the information that we've just been presented?
It's a great question, and I think in light of Mr. Rupert's recognition that 2016's ask was bigger than Jeffco as a community had seen before, I think now we're in a critical stage of needing to understand where our community is. I have a great understanding, certainly greater than I did when I walked in the door a couple years ago, of our facility's condition. I don't know our community's condition in light of that, and their amenability, and what's a priority and what's their capacity as taxpayers, as voters, to say yes. And I think we need to be listening to them. That's a next step. I think we also need to, a next step is to really think through what is the right responsible package if we go to the voters. that balances our priorities, our values, and a recognition that we know what it takes to get a six-year program that would do most to all of what's on a wish list and a need list and a parity list and a cost-saving list. Like, I'm excited about those goals. Let's save 20% every year. Let's cut that facility index score in half. And then I think we also need to think through and get information and understanding from our community regarding our general fund pressures. Because I think the reality is we have, you know, the continuation of a BS factor of losing $78 million a year, and in one of the very best, most optimistic budget cycles for Colorado, we're still looking at like a $63 million budget shortfall. We're in a situation where adequacy and equity and ongoing investment is kind of at a crisis point at every corner. So we need, I think, a major next step is hone the program, the package, and listen to our community to understand and be responsive to the people these schools belong to for what we want to do next for kids.
Yep, I think it's a good first step, and I will get enthusiastic about it. I will, just like the chains for the buses. There is something for everyone in here, which I think our community needs to hear. They do, because everyone feels that their school needs something.
So is it possible for us, and I don't know if the rest of the board feels we need this, but is it possible for us to ask you to begin work at least on getting more specific about, you know, this as an overall presentation is an impressive concept. I don't know if this is a package by itself that's ready for the street, if I can say it that way.
No, it isn't. But it wasn't intended.
No, I understand that isn't what you intended, but and I'm proud of the work you've done. The question is it reasonable for us to try to get more specific?
I think we would love to get more specific with this.
Okay.
And come back to you with it, with more specificity in terms of what we actually are proposing in these individual pies.
Is that
what are your thoughts here as far as next steps?
I think that is the next step, is to start providing more detail behind what's within each of these areas that Tim and the team have talked about, and start engaging our community in what potentially their schools could look like on the other side of this, and having those discussions around, is this something that the community wishes to move forward looking ahead to November? We have a bunch of steps and a bunch of detail to work out around this over the next few months, but I think based on the conversation tonight, it's certainly something that Jeffco desperately needs and is overdue. And I think the point that because this was not addressed in 2016, now the needs are larger, and that's going to continue unless we do something about it.
The needs are larger, and the cost of addressing the needs is larger, and neither is going to stop anytime soon. I guess I'd like to ask that if, when we're going to get more detail, that we get it with a frame of reference of these are our priorities, one and two has to get done, three needs to get done, so that part of the conversation with the community is, how deep are you willing to go? How many problems are you willing to solve with us?
Well, that's an excellent point. If you remember the priorities 1 through 5 that Bruce addressed with you, we have taken the effort to consciously address priority 1s. But if you look at those next two lines, 2s and 3s, those are 1-year impacts, 2 to 3-year impacts. That's not very far.
Right. And by the time we're at the end of the program, a lot of those 4s are 1s now, right?
So, that's correct.
I would love some foresight on that. Honestly, I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's part of the education.
I think that's very important. That's all about being forward thinking and strategic, and letting our community know, look, you know, this is a 6-year plan. So by year 3 of the 6-year plan, this level 5 is going to be a level 1. I mean, I don't know if there's any way to illustrate that. I know there is, actually, but I think that would be true. Part of the presentation, you know? It's...
Well, and I think another step might be, you know, we talked about some communication strategy in terms of beginning to document the condition of our buildings, and I personally have been in a number of our schools, and I would call this need critical, frankly. And it worries me, you know, yes, we could cut this package down greatly and probably, you know, guarantee a successful effort. And the fact of the matter is, if we cut it very much, we'd be back. Yeah. We'd be back trying to do it again in 2 years because additional schools would have risen to the top.
Sure. So do you want a yes on $400 million or a no on $600 million?
It's a balancing act, Brad, and I understand that. I'm just saying that the, you know, the balance on the thing is something we may have to try to communicate to our voters about as well. I'd like to see us communicate about condition, get more specific, you know, on the thing. And I wonder, I don't know, if we shouldn't develop a rationale for why look at 18. There's some things we should talk about there, I think. Mm-hmm.
Can I get clarity? What would be next steps on kind of the second half of that? In addition to communicating more to our community about what's going on, how do we listen to our community? How do we hear from them?
Yeah.
What are the steps that we can take to inform ourselves with their voices?
So during my presentation earlier, I talked about a community outreach survey that we'll be conducting. So that's one element of that. We'll also be doing some mailings before school lets out that contain elements of this proposal, and there'll be an opportunity for people to provide feedback to that. So we're collecting that information across the district. And then all of the community engagement discussions that I have around the district over the next 6 weeks, this will be the issue that I'll be talking about with people. So all of that will form the basis of data that we'll use to inform us on what we should do looking ahead to November. And then even coming back from the summer break and getting back in the swing of school starting up, those conversations will need to continue. If the board is going to be on the ballot, that decision needs to be made no later than the end of August. And so we have several months, but they're going to go by quickly, where we need to collect a lot of information so that you can make an informed decision at that point as to whether or not you wish to be on the ballot.
Are we satisfied with the direction that we have, at least, you know, moving things forward? And I suspect we'll be back together soon.
That would be my next question. So, I mean, for an example, I will be at a meeting next week with a large subsection of my community, and I am confident if any of them watched this, they're going to ask me questions. So I would like to, and I love that. That's good. Survey, mailings, those things, bullet points of something to say concretely as a board member while we're out in the community. Would be really helpful to me while I'm in buildings or with people, would be great.
I'll prepare that for you and have it to you tomorrow.
Great.
Okay.
Well, and at some point, some sort of audiovisual, something that we can take on the road to lead these discussions and show people comparisons and show people what we're talking about when we're talking about need.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to say then to Mr. Huxley, Mr. Reed, Bell, thank you. Steve, did you want to say something?
Thank you.
No, I think in closure, the only thing I would like to say is that thing with the chains on the bus.
Yes.
Used to be the best kept secret in the transportation department.
So you need to tell me these things. They're inviting me back to drive the bus. Awesome. I told them that's way beyond my capability.
Yeah, we don't let you drive the bus.
I'd like to caution you on that, Susan, and unless you have a CDL.
Yeah. I know.
That's a commercial driver's license.
I told Ron is your man here. But
yeah, Ron would drive it for him. All right. Thank you for your presentation. Board members, I'm going to suggest we take a short break right now, and let's try to hold it to 5. We've got quite a bit of work left to do.
Okay.